Hello and welcome to The Box Seat. You're looking to anything and everything sports related. I'm Alec Dietz.
I'm Andy Amashta.
And I'm Chris Ankiko. And today we're going to discuss the NFL's controversial new anthem policy and talk more about the NBA's conference finals. But first, as always, Alec will provide the weekend rundown of largely postseason action in UW Athletics. Take it away.
Yeah, so first off, track and field is back in action after a week off. They're going to be in Sacramento, California for the NCAA Western Preliminaries.
Can you explain a little bit how track preliminaries and NCAA championships work?
Yes. So UW has 22 individual athletes who qualified and three relay teams. And basically what that means for the individuals is if you finish in the top 48 in your division, and they're in the Western division, the other one's the East. If you're among the top 48 times and you qualify, you get to go to Western regionals. And then if you want to move on to Eugene, Oregon, which is the final site and where you can compete for the national championship, you need to be in the top 12 at NCAA preliminaries. So athletes that, you know, you probably want to look at are Amy Eloise Neal, obviously, in the 5K. She did qualify in the 1500 as well, but she's not going to be running in it. So she's going to be running the 5K as, I believe, the fifth overall seed. So she's got a pretty good shot at advancing. She'll probably be really tactical about it. In fact, I mean, I've seen distance runners. I think Carissa Schreiser out of Missouri is really good. And in indoors, I think she qualified as like the 12th and last runner and then ended up winning because she was just tactical. You only need to be in the top 12. You don't need to be the number one finisher. But Amy's probably good enough to where she'll finish in the top five regardless.
So if you make it to the final 12, are you All-American?
You're guaranteed at least a second team All-America honor.
Okay.
So that's what like Amy got indoors. She finished 12th overall, I believe out of 16 indoors. And that guarantees second team All-America. So she's obviously probably going to go on. Kobe Gilbert is in as the 15th overall seed in the 5K, but I think that he's a really competitive guy and he's really good in races. So I think if he can put together a really good race, he'll advance.
He was the highest finisher for the men in the NCAA cross countries too.
So. He was the only one in place. Mm-hmm. So he was the only one with a first team All-America honor in the 3K indoors. And then other than that, it's a pretty mixed bag. A lot of guys and girls barely qualified. So they're in the 40 range, meaning it's going to take a pretty big upset to get in. Hannah Tarleton is one of the athletes who, coming in as the 20th overall seed, if she can sort of bump up in PR by about a second, which is pretty big in the 400-meter hurdles, she could probably qualify. And Annika Dayton's probably the other one that I sort of point to in the pole vault. She's kind of been improving each and every week. So if she can get a PR, maybe get to that 14-foot mark, she can qualify. She's right, I think she's at 13 feet, eight and a half inches. And before her PR was like 13.5 or something. So she PR'd big time. So if she can keep that up and maybe some others have a down day, she could probably advance. And then as far as the relay teams, it's the top 24 relay teams on each side. So 24 in the West, 24 in the East. And the woman grabbed the 4x4 spot. I believe they're the 20th seed. And the men grabbed both the 4x4 and the 4x1, but they're both like 20. I think the 4x1 is 22, and the 4x4 is in the last spot, the 24 spot. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take pretty big upsets for those guys to go. But with a group, especially on the women's side, with a group as strong as Tarleton, Iman Brown, who ran actually the fastest leg at Pac-12 championships in the 400, because she's had a knee issue. So she hasn't been able to do the short sprints. For some reason, the long one works better. Carolyn Birkenfeld and Imani Apostle. I mean, that's a really solid group. And last year, the 4x4 cracked into that last spot, a big upset. So if they can do that again, which I believe they can do, they might have another relay qualifier. But this has sort of been a down year for track and field. I mean, obviously, heard about the Greg Metcalf resignation or mutual separation, whatever you want to call it. Jason Drake is taking over. He's an assistant distance coach, as fate would have it, as the interim head coach. So it'd be interesting to see if the distance runners are able to, you know, if that will affect them in any way. You know, losing your head coach or leader, a guy who's been there for you since the beginning, who's recruited you.
I mean, he's been here. He was doing distance for 20 years and then 16 years as the head coach of track. So yep.
And then suddenly leaves right before the postseason.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have anyone in line for his replacement?
They do not. The UW said there would be a national search. So my guess is they probably won't hire from within. They'll probably try to find someone to replace him nationally. So
does that mean the assistants are probably out after the year's over too?
I think that some of them maybe. My guess is a lot of the distance ones might not be retained. But I think Eric Metcalf in the sprints, he's nationally recognized as one of the best sprint coaches in the country. He actually played football for the Cleveland Browns, knows LeBron James personally. So, like, I think he tweeted at him once. LeBron tweeted at Eric Metcalf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really weird. I don't know where I saw it. Yeah, so they knew each other. So I think Eric Metcalf is probably safe if he gels with a new coach. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week. We'll see. I mean, again, a lot of UW's top performers are distance runners. Caitlin Neal in the 10K is another name to watch. Obviously, Amy, Colby. You know,
what about Chase Smith? Is that right?
In the pole vault?
Chase Smith in the pole vault?
So he's been out with a torn meniscus
for a couple of weeks. That's done then.
Yeah, and Zach Shugart's sort of taken over, but Shugart's had a tough time getting over the 17-foot bar. And if you really want to qualify, you got to be in the upper mid-17 range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's been sort of a tough road for UW with injuries. They lost Michael Thomas for a lot of the year, and he's one of their, if not their best, 400-meter runner.
CK High School alum.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he played basketball. He was really good.
Wow, okay.
He's very good.
Yeah, but they have him now. Obviously, Ryan Crozen, very good. But also you're asking guys like Evan Mathias and Kemuel Santana to be on that team, and those are both true freshmen. I think Santana's a walk-on. So a lot of pressure on a lot of young athletes, but, you know, you never know. This is championship season. This is where people rise up. So
that's why you play.
It'll be interesting to see who will qualify, if any, for Eugene.
I'm looking at Eric Metcalf, actually, right now.
Yeah.
He's a 3-time All-Pro.
Yeah.
Kick return.
For the Browns.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Did 12 return touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you should. The SID was telling me I should look at, like, his, like, mixtape. Apparently it's,
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently it's, like, really good. So.
Dang. We'll check that out after this.
But yeah, I think his job is safe. He trains with like Marcus Chambers, who's a really good track runner, who's local. He's from Seattle, and some other guys that are up here. There, I went to a practice, and there was like a professional that he was like training, so he knows what he's doing. So I would say he's probably the most safe. But I would guess that Jason Drake might be on his way out. Anita Campbell, who's an alum, who worked with Metcalf. We'll see if she sticks around, but who knows? There's a lot of questions about the program right now, and I think, you know, obviously they don't want to talk about it right now. Jen Cohen kind of came out with a statement that wasn't too illuminating, so.
And plus, they just have announced all their new recruits and everything.
Exactly.
So
and
they don't want to try, they're trying to hold on to them. And
exactly. Well, and they have a sprinter coming in who's, like, busted some state records and stuff, and they have a hurdler who broke a state record. So we'll see if they stick around or if any athletes decide, hey, especially distance runners, say, like, hey, I want to transfer. Not that, you know, I mean, they're big-time runners for both seniors, Amy Eloise and Colby. So, I mean, they're going to lose them regardless.
Yeah, plus Andrew Gardner, he was the big guy in distance for them.
Well, and he's again, another guy I actually forgot to mention. He comes in as the 12th time in the West in the steeplechase, which is the weirdest event ever.
Steeplechase is weird.
Yeah,
I was watching
that
just randomly at a Subway once that had a TV. And I was like, what am I watching
yeah,
here?
It's
this
super
is
weird.
An Olympic race.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm like, this is actually an event that people do?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was the highest rated finisher at Pac-12 Championships. He was the runner-up by a couple hundredths of a second.
Oh, wow, okay.
Or a couple tenths, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he can kind of crack, if he can stay in that 12 range, I mean, a lot of people run their best races. Sometimes they're really tactical because distance, like they'll run slow because all you need to do is win. It's not time-based. So I think like it's like the top three finishers in each heat go and then it's time-based.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're in a slow heat, you better hope you finish in the top three.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to watching, you know, how they respond to
everything that's been going on, yeah, for sure.
Their head coach leaving and sort of having a down year. And, I mean, they're being led by all these seniors. Like, who knows what's going to happen next year. A lot of freshmen in the relay lineups. So, baseball up next. And you got that. They're at home for senior weekend versus third-ranked Stanford.
Yeah, you know, this is actually basically the perfect weekend that Pac-12 baseball could have hoped for. So, three games separate UW and UCLA, who are tied for third, and Stanford in first with Oregon State, who are actually ranked nationally above Stanford because they took two out of three games against Stanford. They're ranked second. Stanford's ranked third, but Stanford is leading the Pac-12 at 21-6 record in conference. With that gap, though, OSU is playing UCLA, and UW is playing Stanford. So you have 1-4
wow.
and 2-3 in the last weekend of the conference.
Own little mini tournament.
Is UCLA third right now?
UCLA is third only because their overall is better. They have the same record as in the conference. Huskies in conference, 18-9. OSU is actually basically has the same record. They're 18-8-1. They had a tie. I don't really know what happened there. But because of that, they're technically second, even though if you turn that into a loss, then they'd be tied on record with the Huskies and the Bruins. It really makes you think about the Huskies had such a bad start to the season just because of the injuries. They couldn't get any kind of form or rhythm. And you think about games like they probably could have swept USC. They lost the opening game of that series by like one or two. They lost that 13-inning game to Oregon. They could have swept Oregon.
Washington State.
They dropped a game where they could have. But then on the flip side, you walk off Arizona twice. And you steal a game from Cal, steal a game from OSU. And so, yeah, it all comes down to this weekend. For the Cardinal, they literally just have to win one game to clinch the division. For the Huskies, since that's the team they're playing, the Huskies need a sweep, and they need OSU to drop at least one game to UCLA to win the Pac-12. UCLA needs to sweep OSU and needs Washington to take at least a game, or not take a game, needs Washington to sweep Stanford, and OSU needs Washington to sweep Stanford, and it needs to sweep UCLA.
Now, these are all for the division.
These are all for the Pac-12 conference championship.
Okay, but what does Washington need to make the postseason? Like, what's their
minimum? Washington needs to make the postseason. It's going to be really close because if they win the conference, they get an automatic bid.
Okay.
So, I mean, obviously, that's your goal, and that will be determined basically the first night if Lucas Knowles can beat Stanford's ace. Stanford has the best pitching staff in the conference, so that'll be the key game. But if the UW can take two games, they're almost guaranteed a spot because Stanford's so highly ranked. They swept Utah last week. They're actually four consecutive series wins now. If they get swept, they're done. So they have to win at least, and if they win one game, it's going to be real close.
Okay.
Like, we're talking 63rd, 64th team in if they win one game.
So they need to win two to not leave it to chance as much.
Yeah. Two, it's still a little questionable, but two wins over the number three team in the country looks really good. Especially during the last weekend of the season would look good for your RPI. And honestly, a question you could have with Stanford is if Stanford clinches the division in game one, they might put their second string in for games two and three because they won't want to risk them because they're obviously gunning for a national championship.
Well, and they're guaranteed a national seed.
Yeah, exactly. They're guaranteed a national seed. Even really, if all they three probably teams. Get swept. Yeah, yeah. They're basically guaranteed a host too. They're going to host a regional.
Do they do it the same as softball with the super regional?
Yeah, yeah.
So if they got swept, would they still host a super?
I don't know if they'd still host the super. If they get swept by an unranked team in the last week in the season, I don't even know if they'd still host a regional for sure. Mm-hmm. I think they still have a chance to, considering that they are still in single-digit losses for the whole season. And they've got a lot of other things, but, I mean, they're probably – Stanford's – the most worrying thing for Stanford is that they got beat down by Oregon State. The first game was close, but the second game, they lost 10-0, which is not a good sign for a team heading in. They have a new manager this season, too. Their legendary manager retired last year. But, I mean, the program is so strong that it really – hasn't fazed them too much. Losing to OSU a couple weekends ago will be worrying to them. And then if something, they'd obviously want to have a good weekend to send them off. So it's a little questionable. Yeah, if Washington wins game one, it'll make the whole weekend that much more exciting for the rest of the Pac-12, though. So yeah, it's a dream weekend in Pac-12 baseball. And yeah, the Huskies, considering with how they started and everything, this has actually been a very good season. Even if they end up finishing in fourth out of these top four teams, like, they're projected to finish seventh. Didn't have Willie McIver for the first, basically all of the non-conference season. AJ Graffanino goes down injured really early. Chris Michaels struggles. So then you have to pull Lucas Knowles, who just recovered from Tommy John. So, I mean, it's been a remarkable season. And the weird thing with baseball is always that you never know how many of the recruits that you've signed, basically, are actually going to come. Because the UW they've got this pitcher who threw a perfect game in high school, I think a month ago. He's committed to come to UW, but the odds are he's going to go in the top maybe like seven rounds, and if he gets enough signing bonus, he's going to go there instead. So it's always a little questionable where your recruiting class will actually fall. You don't know who's going to come and who's going to go to jump to the bigs. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here. They're gonna lose a lot of players though this season because McIver's probably gone, Graffinino's probably gone, Jordan's probably gone, and that's your three infielders. That leaves Jordan Schiffer, the true freshman, at first. He can move to third, or they could play Ben Baird. But so you're losing them. There's a chance Mason Cirillo gets drafted. He's an odd quantity just because he's not a powerful hitting corner infielder, which is kind of what you want. And because he throws left-handed, he can't play anywhere else really besides the outfield and first base. And he's not a great first baseman, but he hits for a really high average. He leads the team in hits. He's hitting like 362, which is ridiculous. Hitting almost 400 at some points of the year. He's kind of come back down to earth a little bit, but he could be gone.
Wayne House is gone.
He's your big home run guy.
Demers
is definitely gone. Oh, Hardy's gone. There goes your closer.
Yep.
So they're potentially looking at this could be a totally different team.
Losing like every key contributor.
Almost.
Basically.
The only ones you know who are still going to be here because of like they literally can't leave is, you know, Braden Ward will still be here next year and he'll be even better. He already leads the league in steals, so he'll be there in center field. Christian Jones has really come along this season. He's starting to find his power stroke too, so that's good. He'll be in right. You know that Schiffer will still be here. I don't know where he'll play. Corner infield for sure, but I'm not sure which one. And you know Kale will still be here. And then in the pen, you know Bergman will still be here and Stevie Emmanuels. And then you got Knowles and Jordan Jones returning. And if you can get Michaels back on track, Bergman could probably start if you wanted. Emmanuels might start if the kid, I don't know his name, but if the high schooler comes, he'll start. So, you know, it'll be interesting for sure. That's what makes college baseball such an interesting sport. You never know exactly what the team's going to look like next year.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were going to say you never know what's going to happen.
No.
Because I feel like you say that quite a bit.
I do say that quite a bit. But no, specifically with college baseball.
It's just to say it.
You never know what's going to happen.
You never know what's going to happen. Yeah. It's like this podcast. You never know what's going to happen.
What I actually say is anything can happen, but...
Anything can happen.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it.
It's all good. But yeah, so it'll be a really interesting weekend, and this could be the weekend that defines their season. They're the only other Pac-12 team that can make it in, really. Yeah.
How long has it been since they made the tournament?
They made the tournament 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
They switch every other year. They place either they either get seventh or second. So we were second 2 years ago and we made the regional then. We were seventh last season and then we have the chance to end up in second this year or first or fourth. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But the last 4 years, I believe it went second, seventh, second, seventh. So...
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting pattern.
It's been very interesting for sure. But, you know, actually, the funny thing is every year that they're projected to end up, or every year they end up in seventh, they're projected to finish like top four. And then when they have no expectations, they play a lot better and they end up finishing in like second. Although Meigs has never won a Pac-12 championship. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, you want to talk about do or die. The softball team is also in a similar situation. After sweeping the regionals last week against Boise, Minnesota, and Texas, maybe not in that order, they move on to super regionals.
They didn't even have to play Minnesota, so.
Yeah, they did.
You're right. They did in the last game.
I think it went Boise, Texas, Minnesota.
Yeah, it did.
Sweeping through that, Alabama also swept
gutsy,
through
though.
Theirs.
It was not
very gutsy. The Texas win was tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the Boise one was like a walkathon.
Yeah.
The walk off run was literally a walk.
Weren't they up like 3-0 or something like that with just walks?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Boise pitcher had a no hitter going.
Yeah, the no hitter. That's so weird.
That's insane. And then obviously go on to win a gutsy game against Minnesota. Now they move on to, hey, they want Bama, 12 seed.
Alabama rolled their regional though.
Yes, they did.
Absolutely. I think did they mercy rule every game? They might have.
The one thing the softball team has going for them is they beat Alabama twice already this year at Husky Softball Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a similar situation here. If they can take two or three, they can take the first two. The Women's College World Series for the second straight year.
Yeah. It'll definitely be a challenge. They've hit not great form at a very bad time. Like, this isn't the team that was steamrolling teams.
Through
the
non-con,
through the non-conference season, so... Yeah, they really need to find that form. And I feel like it's more that the hitters aren't coming through.
No, it is. And, you know, they've been without a healthy Taren Alvelo,
their ace,
for a long time. And Gabby Plain has been absolutely amazing.
Outstanding.
At that position.
Yeah,
and she's carried them, too. Because, I mean, I think Alvelo got the start in the third game, but kind of got taken out and Plain came in. So, I mean, Plain pitched... pretty much every single inning.
Yeah. That's crazy how softball works like that. They can just pitch, like, ridiculously.
Yeah.
Like,
I always find that shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, for the third straight day, there's Taryn Alvelo.
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly. Wait, but she pitched, and then, but how is her arm still on her body?
Yeah, I was about to say, I just saw her 2 days ago and yesterday.
And she threw, like, 100 pitches.
And she
pitches.
Threw a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
the rotator insane. Cuff, man.
Yeah, I guess insane. So, but...
Well, and she's a freshman, so maybe hasn't worn out yet.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in both sports, they kind of treat pitchers, they have rubber arms. Like, it's not that uncommon for a pitcher to go 120-plus in college, which is, like, not heard of at all in the majors.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting. The pitching's been good. The hitting has kind of been...
questionable.
You know, there, sometimes not there. But it was big for them at key moments last week. So if they can generate similar to this, I mean, really, you just need two wins.
Yeah.
You don't need to run rule both these teams.
No, you don't. Or, it'd be a good confidence boost to run rule Alabama, but I don't think...
But a win gets you in.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily reasonable to expect.
Yeah. Right now. Well, and you got the home crowd behind you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to travel anywhere. I think they're staying at a different hotel because of postseason rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, can't use their home locker room, and, like they switch home and away. It's weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, you know, coming in as the fifth overall seed and playing the 12 seed, this is – they're expected to get in, but the Crimson Tide will probably be familiar.
They were the one seed playing the three seed a couple weeks ago. So.
Exactly. Well, and I think Josh pointed out a stat where UW has played Alabama more times recently than Arizona State.
Yeah.
They've played them, like, the past 2 or 3 years 10 times and played Arizona State 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
That.
Wow. The amount of times they've played each other. So
you got
familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah.
We'll see if it gets chippy.
Yeah.
And then lastly, also another do or die, the women's rowing team will be in Florida for the NCAA National Championships. They'll hope to follow suit from last year and sweep through all the NCAA races again. So it'll be the Varsity 4 and the first and second Varsity 8s. And yeah, we'll see. They're coming off a sweeping, I believe, the Pac-12 Championships and a very strong performance for the second straight year. So we'll see if they can carry forward that momentum after a few weeks off into Florida, which doesn't seem like a great place to host.
To host rowing,
you know. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's it for the
That puts
sports.
A cap on maybe the longest UW athletics segment that doesn't include football or basketball.
Yeah, that was
pretty
a long
sure.
One.
I mean, when you got a lot of postseason action to discuss.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go through it.
You can get a lot.
So
we're going to move on to our two main topics. But I guess before we do that, we don't talk, obviously, a lot about hockey on this show. But
to Haley's
I think
contempt.
To Haley's contempt, exactly. But I think it's worth pointing out that the expansion Vegas Golden Knights are advancing to the Stanley Cup Final in their first year.
I mean, that's so impressive.
That's a great story.
It's amazing.
Like, I mean, the fact that these guys were all on the team because they were put out by their other teams is like, you can have them. Like,
yeah.
It's not a huge loss for us if you take them. So
they weren't wanted.
Yeah, I know. Like, they've been phenomenal. Marc-Andre Fleury has, like, revitalized his career. And
yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like they've been, like, barely getting by these
no,
teams.
No, they are smoking teams.
Yeah, I mean, they beat... Who did they beat in the Western Conference Finals?
No.
Was it the Lightning?
Winnipeg,
no,
right?
Winnipeg. It was
Winnipeg.
Because the Lightning are the ones that they're going against.
Yeah, the Capitals.
Yeah, so they beat them 4-1. I think they beat the Sharks in 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe they swept the Kings.
Yeah, they did.
I think so.
So, I mean, you're looking at a team that's dominated through. I mean, they've gotten beaten games, but, like, the Sharks took them to 6 games, and that was the most.
And also, like, there's never been a feeling that they're not going to win the series.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk Warriors eventually. Like, even the Warriors, like, they've had their sketchy moments in this postseason already. And,
like
the Golden Knights have not looked, like, vulnerable at all.
No.
So, I mean, it's so impressive.
I mean, they have the biggest chip on their shoulder ever.
Oh, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, everyone's trash.
They were
basically.
Throwaways.
Yeah. It was the NHL's trash becomes the gold of the Western Conference.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think
so
Josh
strange.
Needs to write an apology.
Oh yeah,
article.
So yeah, we want to talk about. So just refer to if you want to read it. It's called Hockey in Vegas. Really, it's by Josh. It's from I think what June or July of last year, and basically said that the odds of Vegas doing really anything, or the odds of a snowflake falling in Vegas, or
something like that.
There's
a line like that.
But man, it is scathing.
Yeah, it was. I think it was written in anger. But
big anger.
Yeah, that is a tweet that did not. Would you like to read the quote?
Yeah, to put it bluntly, I'd say that an NHL franchise in Las Vegas has the same odds of success as a snowflake's chance in, well, Vegas.
That rough. Tweet did not age rough. Well.
Old takes exposed.
Yep.
Yep. And then his last two sentences are, good luck, Vegas. You're going to need it.
So basically, I think Josh jinxed the entire NHL.
Yeah. Yes, he did. They should all point back to him mm-hmm. and say that he's the reason
it's his fault.
Why this is happening.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but it's a great story. And, I mean, that's really why we watch sports, right? We want the stories. And, I mean, yeah, no it's better like, way to...
It's like the Leicester City.
Yeah, it's hockey. Like Leicester City yeah. hockey. Almost.
Soccer reference. I made a soccer reference before you did. Isn't this weird?
Congratulations.
This is a weird show. UW Athletics is long.
Yeah, I know. A soccer reference from someone that's not Andy.
I know.
What is happening with yeah. this world?
See, you never know with the box seat.
You never know what's going to happen.
Anything can happen. It's the box seat.
Oh, yeah, no. So we're going to get into the NFL owners passing their new anthem policy. So a little bit of background on that, I guess. Basically, in a nutshell, any team personnel, including players, must stand, quote-unquote, stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem if they are on the field at that time. According to the policy statement, it replaces a previous policy that said players should stand but did not make it required. And so if you don't want to be out there, if you don't want to stand for the anthem, you have to be in the locker room, and you can't sit on the bench or kneel. Mm-hmm. And I believe, was it 31 out of the 32 owners voted yes?
Yes.
And then Jed York was the 49ers CEO was the only owner that was the only one that abstained.
Yes. Abstained. Apparently it was not unanimous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because, yeah, an abstention isn't a vote against, yeah. so it's still unanimous.
But what I find interesting is, and we talked about this before the show, was that the Jets owner, I forget his name, Christopher something, basically said that he would offer to pay the fines for his athletes.
Christopher Johnson.
Christopher Johnson. So why didn't he vote against it? Or why didn't he abstain? He voted for it, but then he's like, okay, I'm going to pay their fines? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I don't really get it either, but it says that he, according to the ESPN article I'm looking at, it says he wanted to avoid any appearance of muzzling players. And I mean...
Muzzling, that's an interesting...
Yeah, that's an interesting term, especially when considering that, like, most of the NFL is black.
Yep.
And all of the...
80%, I believe, is the number.
Something like that. I wouldn't even doubt if it was higher than that. But I'm not, this is just... It's gone so far away from the whole point, because the whole point was that Kaepernick didn't want to stand because he was trying to bring awareness to
police brutality.
Yeah, exactly.
Things like that. But they wanted to talk about like division and stuff, and like they wanted to like sort of the narrative of more about unity and stuff like that. But it's not that anything about what it was about in the first place.
No, yeah, and then the whole like disrespecting of America part, like it was never about that either.
Well, you know who told him to take a knee? It was an army vet.
Yeah, exactly.
It was Nate Boyer.
Yeah, and like I agree, like just sitting on the bench isn't really a good look. But I didn't have any problem. I mean, of course I didn't. I'm living in Seattle right now. But yeah. I mean, like kneeling, if anything, seems almost more respectful than standing to me. Like it's almost, you know, like when people propose and stuff, they're on the knee and like. I mean,
or maybe like just even with sitting down, because sitting down just looks kind of lazy.
Yeah.
Because
kneeling,
at least, it's like a proactive action.
Mm-hmm.
That you're like really demonstrating that.
Trying to raise awareness.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
It's his First Amendment right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I know the NFL is a private organization, so I don't know if you can say that they're violating their First Amendment right based off the organization, even though I should because I'm in mass media law.
Don't tell your professor.
Yeah, I will tell my professor. But I think, like, It's just really not a good look by the NFL. It's ill-informed. It just shows the narrative that, I mean, athletes have been tweeting out about the fact that the NFL doesn't care.
No, they don't.
I saw someone from Chris Long, line of athletes that are just coming out against this. I think a lot of people just in general are against this sort of thing. It's just like, you know.
I mean, yeah.
Why you need to make it, put it to a vote.
And then it leads totally into the whole thing about, like, Kaepernick getting, like, blackballed out of the NFL. And same with Eric Reed, right? Because he's still unsigned.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Like, if Kaepernick was, even if you say borderline, he's better than most of the backups.
That's the thing is that
in the league.
It's all about PR fire.
Oh, absolutely.
You just don't want him. The owners just don't want him on their team.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the league in general.
Yeah. And the whole point about, like, their First Amendment rights and everything, the First Amendment rights is based off the idea that arenas and stuff like that are public space, so they should be able to say or do or express any actions that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so the owners are saying that no, it's private, But then what does that mean? Does that mean they are actually owning the players then?
Yeah. If it's like, it's sort of a statement like, we control you.
Well, who is that
we control how you express yourself.
Who was that Clippers owner? Donald Sterling?
Donald Sterling.
What comments? I forget what he made.
It's something about Matt Kemp being black. I don't exactly
remember. But then he made some comment about like owning.
Owning the... I don't know.
I don't know.
But he got banished from the league forever.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that just goes to show where the NBA is against where the NFL is. I think part of that too is that the NBA is more popular in cities and in more liberal places, honestly. Like, football is the big sport for the middle of the country and the conservatives, more or less. And they're pandering to the people they make their money off of.
Well, I know that Jerry Jones was one that was really against the kneeing.
Yeah.
So obviously he was probably a big voice in that room.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's Jerry Jones. I wouldn't expect anything different from him.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a bad look. There's not much more to say than that. They're literally.
I don't know if it's gonna last. Yeah. I think it's hard for me to say because I'm not an NFL player. But I mean, 80% of the league is probably against this.
At least.
Like, what if you just don't show up to play?
Yeah, for real. Well, I mean, that's the problem, though. They'll just place you with not as good people. Eric Reed.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. One of the proposals I'm just reading here was to clear the field of all team personnel before the anthem.
I mean, that's what they used to do. The anthem playing before the game is a super American thing anyways. No other country does that.
Well, it's not like I'm sitting at home on my TV and watching a game, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to stand up. Like, normally I go to the bathroom.
Right. Yeah, like remove your hat, put your hand over your heart.
Because
they don't even show it on TV most of the time.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, like a Pepsi
ad. They'll do it for the playoffs, and that's it. That's about it.
And it's mostly because someone is performing it that is relevant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, like, when I'm sitting in, like, a press box or something and the anthem goes on, I'm usually doing something during it.
Oh, no, I stand.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, everyone stands. Well, because the press box for basketball is, there's no box.
Press row.
That's true.
It's just press row, so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's only, like, four of us in the press box for
baseball,
so.
Yeah, the basketball press row is so crammed sometimes for the big games.
Yeah, of course. It's sad to see it come to this point where they're making players do something.
Yeah, and they didn't consult with the NFLPA at all. During the adoption
of
this policy.
That's a separate issue on its own.
That's just a travesty.
Yeah, that's the whole point of a union. We'll see if they do something, strike or what they're going to do about it. But,
and I mean, the NFL's already losing money. They lost viewership, and it's not because of the protests.
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, that's the thing is that everyone says, like, oh, because of the protests, because we're, you know. What, Papa John lost his job because of the protests and because he thought it was hurting his business. So,
but it's just really because Papa John pizza sucks.
Hey man, they got a great Mariners deal when they scored five or more runs because it's right across the street from me. So that's why.
I don't love Papa John's, but okay.
Yeah, it's just convenient for me.
Yeah,
a little, maybe a little too convenient. Oh no, just because because of the product on the field. Simply, it's just not as quality as it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, and there's not a true rivalry.
That's true.
Like, the 49ers and the Seahawks were saving the league back in their day.
Because they really passionately hated each other.
Well, and that was, like, a must-watch game. I mean, like, everyone wanted to tune. Even when, like, I think the Seahawks beat the crap out of the 49ers a few times. And it was, like, a big primetime billing, and Kaepernick had, like, his worst games. Everyone was tuning in to watch that stuff.
Week 2, 2013 season.
Something like, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
What about the game where Ted Ginn took two a punt return and a kick return for touchdown? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
I don't remember that.
Selective
when did that happen?
I don't know.
Probably never. You don't have any information to back that up.
Do I need to look it up?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, you're pretty sure you already know who's coming out of the AFC anyways. It's going to be like the Steelers or the Patriots.
Well, the Patriots.
Well, I was going to say, like, what is a game where you're like, that's a game I want to watch?
Hey, that's... The NFL's parody.
No.
They're all equal. So
the Vikings.
They're all equal. So there's nobody who you're really excited to watch, like, big game.
Okay, people say they're really about parody, but
no. No, yeah.
Everyone wants to see the Warriors and the Cavs.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody's actually about parody. Like, if I was going to watch parody, I'd end up watching the Suns and the Kings. They're equal because they both suck. I don't want to watch that game.
I don't think that's really a definition of parody.
Well, if they were all, like, that level or something.
Well, yeah, because if everyone sucked, then yeah.
All right, so then how about, like, Pacers versus Pistons? They both have one All-Star.
Do you want to watch that game, or do you want to watch Warriors and the Cavs?
I want to watch Warriors and Cavs. I'll watch that. Cavs. I
mean, okay, listen, LeBron James versus
the Warriors and the Cavs have had the highest ratings of any finals, I think.
Yeah, that's because it's LeBron versus probably the greatest team ever assembled.
Yeah, exactly. Who doesn't want to watch that? I want to watch that.
I mean,
for the fourth straight year, if it happens this year.
Well, I'll watch it again. If it's the fourth straight year.
People always say they're sick and tired of seeing the Warriors and the Cavs together, but would you rather watch Warriors Cavs or Rockets Celtics? Like, as a fan. You might be sick of the Warriors.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Warriors Cavs still.
I'm biased, so I won't say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be okay with Celtics Rockets, but I don't think I'd be as interested. Because you're right, like, I as vocal as I have been for James Harden for MVP, I haven't watched full games of him. I watched highlights of him more, and I've been watching full games in the playoffs.
He destroyed Draymond yesterday.
Yeah. You're right. It is very not fun to watch. Like, props for him. He averages a lot of points, and it works, but it is not fun to watch.
No. And Chris Paul's sort of the same way.
Yeah. A little bit.
So if we're diving now deep into the NBA Conference Finals, the transition there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smooth.
Well, I think the Warriors and Celtics sort of play kind of the same way in terms of, like, the team ball, even though they sort of got away from that in games 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Rozier was taking a ton of pull-up threes.
Yeah.
And everyone was really taking
it. And the Warriors got away from it as well.
Got away from it as well. Yeah. But, I mean,
in game 4.
They play more similar styles than, because obviously Cavs-Rockets final would be an ISO-heavy final.
It'd be ISO-heavy, shoot a ridiculous amount of threes final.
Yeah.
It'd just literally be whose role players are hitting their threes tonight.
Well, and that's the issue that the Warriors have been having is because Houston is so... I mean, I'll give Houston this amount of credit. They have so many players that are really good in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Gordon is awesome in isolation. Chris Paul, really good in isolation. James Harden, obviously, really
James
good
James Harden might
isolation.
Be the best the one-on-one best isolation player. Yeah.
Maybe other than LeBron James and Kevin Durant?
Mm, yeah, maybe.
I mean, yeah, Kevin Durant, in when isolation, he gets the ball, you just expect him to score
like
whenever
he
has the ball.
You just hope he misses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically.
You know?
Doesn't miss very often, so.
You can play good defense on James Harden.
Yeah, you can.
But then he'll just kind of flail his arms and draw a foul.
Yeah,
you throw his head back, yeah.
Throw his head back. Like, kind of like he died or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or got hit in the face.
Then he'll be perfectly fine in 5 seconds and then make 2 free throws.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the issue the Warriors have had, and then they've sort of fallen in this trap where they're like, okay, we're going to play ISO with KD and Steph, and it's like, you know. If they want to win this series, because it's in doubt, it's 2-2. Houston's got home court, and there's 3 games left. They need to get back to playing team ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if the Rockets can still sort of pigeonhole them into the way they play offensively and make it in just an ISO-ISO series, Houston's got a much better chance of winning rather than the Warriors doing what they normally do, which is sharing the ball, getting open shots.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, with the... Because you also have to take into account, I saw something, Klay Thompson might not play game 5.
Yeah, there was some weird comment he made, like, I'm not going to miss game 6. And it was like, what about game 5?
So that means you're missing game 5?
Like, what about game 5?
I feel like with Klay, though, there's a chance he forgot about game 5.
Yeah. So who knows? And then, obviously, the Andre Iguodala injury was, I think, bigger than a lot of people anticipated.
Oh, definitely. Because, I mean, Curry and Durant, by the end of the game, were so tired.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at Iguodala, and he had allowed 1 field goal in the first 3 games combined.
Yeah.
Which is just incredible, because he's tasked with guarding James Harden, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul. Like, he's one of their better defenders out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have a hobbled Klay Thompson, I mean, your defense takes a huge hit. I mean, those are your 2 best perimeter defenders.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
So, especially in that ISO system, I mean, it's rough. Draymond's sort of owning Clint Capella down low, boxing him out, which is just insane given his height.
Yeah, Capella's so much bigger than him.
But other than that, you know, the matchups have sort of favored the Rockets in isolation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in isolation, it's always gonna favor.
Other
the
than Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And then Kevin Durant just wasn't hitting his shots, which I think that's what you can attribute to the fatigue, but.
Yeah.
The Celtics cannot play on the road, though.
No, they cannot.
I never understood the whole, like, going away is so much harder part, but apparently it is.
It's weird that because their play style just completely changes.
Yeah.
It's just a mindset.
It's a mindset. They just, like, completely forget. It's kind of like the Cavs in Boston, too. Mm-hmm. It's like they just forget how to play as a team.
Yeah.
So the home team just plays as a team. The road team doesn't. So that's why the home team always wins and the road team always loses.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of a weird... like mental block that these teams have.
I gotta say though, if LeBron pulls this series out, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, it would.
He should not. Like, the Cavs should not beat the Celtics.
This Cavs team definitely should not.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have beat, I mean, they shouldn't have beat the Raptors on paper.
We don't talk about the Raptors anymore.
They shouldn't beat the Pacers on paper.
I mean, he's got the key to the city already, so we talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
But, I mean, LeBron just, what else can be said? He just gets better with age.
Yeah.
It's crazy. He's 33 years old, maybe his best year in the league. The fact that he's just carrying these Cleveland teams constantly to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
No, he's incredible. Like, I've always been more of a, like, Jordan is the GOAT. And I still think Jordan is the GOAT. But, I mean, every season LeBron plays, he makes it harder to argue.
It's
hard. Incredible, just the ability to sustain this over this long of career. And, yeah, I'm not going to compare LeBron in his 15th year to Michael Jordan in his 15th year because that's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at a guy that has been able to do this for 15 years, every single year. I mean, like, I think he's gotten hurt a few times, but...
Yeah, the durability.
It's just
but I mean, he's a real life man of steel.
Mm-hmm. How many players? I wonder how many players from his draft are even left.
Kyle Korver.
Hey.
Kyle Korver.
Right. Yeah, he's taken in the second round of that draft.
Isn't I mean Dwayne Wade's still?
Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne's still in the league.
And Carmelo. Although Carmelo is
garbage.
Garbage. Yes, he's garbage.
Yep. I'll finish that sentence for you. Garbage.
Every time. Yeah, I don't. It's crazy. He's just a freak athlete, man. Like he's one of those guys where. At this point, even the like LeBron haters, like you just gotta appreciate.
Just gotta appreciate the greatness. It's the same as the Warriors. I mean, like you can hate them all you want, hate KD for joining the Warriors, creating a super team, but like they're fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockets team, to a degree, is fun to watch. To a degree.
Yeah, the game two Rockets were really fun to watch.
Yeah.
When they were moving the ball like that, that was really good.
It was very un-Rockets like.
Yeah, yes. It was.
So
yes.
That's why it worked.
Yeah, and I mean, you got Ariza and PJ Tucker actually hitting their shots.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, they go as their role players go.
Yeah, they need them to step up for sure. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they've already proven you can't beat the Warriors unless your role guys step up. Even with the Cavs. I mean, LeBron can put in a Herculean effort and lose in the 2015 playoffs.
Yeah.
And in 2016, I mean, he had a lot of help from Kyrie.
Yeah. Kyrie's still one of the best finishers I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unfortunate that he didn't get to play in this series.
That would have been
so very crazy. Interesting to see.
Yeah.
Even Gordon Hayward, like, I just want to see a healthy Celtics team.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Celtics team looks like... I think we talked about this before.
We have talked about this before.
Yeah, I don't know if they look like this with Hayward and with Irving. Like, Tatum's not getting that many minutes, and I don't know what you do with Jaylen Brown necessarily.
Well, and Irving's very... isolation heavy. Mm-hmm. He's an ISO player. Like,
yeah,
he would work with the Rockets.
Yeah.
So, like, it sort of changes how they do their system.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the more I watch Jason Tatum, the more I'm just in love with his game. I know
he's such a polished player.
Such a polished player. I mean, have you seen the little Kobe clip from Detail?
Mm-hmm.
Where he's kind of like, oh, you know, very, like, subtle type things. Like, you need to go more behind the screen to get a shot off rather than... Even the guy, I don't know, it was just really, it was pretty cool. I mean, that he's given him such like nuanced criticism.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
a 20-year-old.
The Detail series has been really cool.
Yeah. It's too bad it's behind a subscription wall. Even though I'll probably get it eventually. It's probably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because considering that ESPN made a giant deal with the UFC as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
My brother's going to be all over that.
Nah, I think, look, he could be in line to win an Emmy now, too. This is a TV show, right?
Kobe. Well, I thought we already talked about that.
He won an Oscar.
He won an Oscar.
I thought he said he won an Emmy, too. Or was he nominated for an Emmy?
It's like a sports Emmy? I don't know if it's a real Emmy or not.
I mean, it says Emmy.
We don't need to fuel the Kobe stands fire.
Yo, I love Kobe.
Okay, but Kobe has the worst stands.
Yeah, I know.
It's like him, LeBron. Who's third?
Curry.
I don't know. Curry stands aren't that bad. Because he's an underdog.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Did you guys ever watch the it was from like 9 or 10 years ago, like Kobe doing work? I think it was directed by Spike Lee.
Oh boy.
I kinda liked it.
Yeah.
It was kinda cool. It was like a
Spike.
Day. It was the day in the life of Kobe, even though Spike Lee, I'm very uncertain about him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of his things, he's very inconsistent to say the least.
Yeah. He's consistently inconsistent.
Consistently inconsistent. That's the best way to put it.
All right, and that's it for our show this week. You've been listening to the Box Seat Podcast. I'm Alec Dietz.
Chris Ankiko.
And I'm Andy Amashta. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, please tweet us at Box Seat Podcast. Thanks again, and we'll see you next Friday.
Did you know Peruvians have their own type of Chinese food? Or that Vietnamese food is heavily influenced by French cuisine? Have you ever wondered what other cultures' junk food is like? Explore these topics and more right here on the Soundbite Network. My name is Dee Dee Madigan, and I'm the host of Home Plates, a podcast all about food. Catch up on the first season of Home Plates on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher. New episodes air every Wednesday.
For more like this and other great shows covering sports, science, relationships, and the arts, visit the Soundbites website, uwpodcast.com. That's uwpodcast.com.